Welcome to the Mini Crisis,
brought to you by the Tales of Crisis podcast. Me, your host, Martin Swaffield. In tonight's episode, we're going to be joined by Aaron Collier as we talk about how he prepares for tournaments, his love of web warriors, and his new website. Aaron is currently taking the UK tournament scene by storm, having won all the games he's played so far in the tournaments that he's turned up to, and currently top the world rankings on Longshanks. Admittedly, we're still in its infancy, but it's an impressive stat nonetheless. So check out the interview with some very interesting thoughts from Aaron on how he plays Web Warriors and how he prepares for tournaments. Next week we'll be doing an episode to cover the reveals from Mini Extravaganza. Already there's been some fantastic reveals with some more to come. And we're going to take time to digest those, and we'll put out an episode next week to cover that. With all these new models coming out, if you are looking for anything that your local hobby store doesn't have, check out Blackgate Games at blackgategames.co.uk for a range of Marvel Crisis Protocol miniatures and terrain at discount prices. And now to the interview. I hope you all enjoy. As mentioned, I'm joined tonight by Aaron Collier, and we're going to talk about a number of bits and pieces. He is currently number one in the world ranking for MCP, according to Longshanks. Still in its early days, I know, but he's the only person I can see that's played more than 10 games on there, at least, and is still undefeated. So he's got a number of badges after his name, if you look on there, so that's good news. So welcome, Aaron. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm not too bad at all, to be honest. Yourself?
Not too bad. Good to be talking MCP again.
Yeah, it's always great to be talking Marvel.
Yeah, can't get enough of it. Yeah. So tonight we're going to cover how you prepare for tournaments, construct a roster. We'll talk a bit about your favourite affiliation, Web Warriors. And then we're going to talk about your website that you're running. But before we get into any of that, How did you get into this game? Do you have a long history in wargaming, or is this your first chance to delve into it?
So I've been playing wargames since I was about 10 years old. So about 11 years now I've been into the hobby. And I, for a long time, would play games up to a competitive level and then move on to another game. So rather than having multiple factions, in case I got bored, I'd just have multiple game systems. So if I got a bit bored of playing Lord of the Rings, I'd go over to 40k, and then I'd go over to Malifaux, and then I'd go over to, say, Blood Bowl. But with Marvel, I just can't stop playing the game, man. I absolutely adore Marvel.
It really gets you, doesn't it? It's one of those ones that lures you in, and then once you're in, there's no going back.
Something about it. I mean, I was playing Legion a lot before the lockdown. Went to regionals for that. Was enjoying it quite a lot, but like I said, only because I'm only 21, Star Wars is a little bit, it's not what I actually grew up on, whereas Marvel, it is something that I've always been surrounded by. Like all the Netflix adaptations, the comics, all the movies with the MCU really taking off as we go into Phase 4. So it's one of the first game systems where it's actually very relatable in the sense that I kind of know what's going on and all the characters and stuff.
Yeah, it's a good place to be in. You know, they're doing well to release a good variety of them that kind of fits the. There's a lot of people that want the 90s cartoon ones, and then there's people that are hardcore comics, people that are hardcore films, people, you know, maybe got into it more recently. I think they've done really well to cover most of the bases.
I think at the minute, which is great. I mean, we've got models that are a mix between sort of the MCU version and the comic version, which is great. And I don't think there's any that I've seen anyone massively unhappy with. Obviously, everyone's always going to want to change a small detail or change this or that. But other than that, I think they're absolutely smashing out the park over at Atomic Mask Homes.
Absolutely. Some of the sculpts are absolutely fantastic. The latest set of spider foes, I've been building and painting them up recently, and they're just fantastic, and they just capture what you expect from it.
Yeah, exactly. I've just heard that Lizard, apparently, everyone seems to have a problem gluing him to his water.
It took me, I must admit, I did have to go on the website and do the 360 picture to make sure I was gluing it in the right place. But he goes on really well if you get him in the right place.
Yeah, I mean, if we look at, say, so I recently built a core box for a friend that's just jumped into the game. Iron Man, Ultron, oh my God, they absolutely did my head in. Whereas last night I was lucky enough to get Moon Knight. I built him and he was just a pleasure to put together.
Yes. Yeah, I've said to a number of people that I've introduced to the game, don't be put off by the core set models because they're a pain to put together. I still haven't even built Ultron and Doc Ock yet because I just keep looking at them going, no, not bother. But yeah.
In terms of models, I think the only core box model I've even built for myself is Baron Zemo because I looked at a lot of the others and just went, I don't need this. I don't need this kind of stress to build models.
Yeah. And some of the early boxes as well, the likes of Shuri, etc., are a bit of a pain to build. But there's a noticeable improvement in not just the quality of the sculpts, but the ability. You know, they've really thought them through and how the people are going, how people are going to put them together and the modelling aspect of it.
Which is obviously really helpful. It's making it a lot easier, a lot more accessible for people to just pick up a box and not have to spend, you know, an entire evening trying to figure out how Iron Man's arm in four pieces goes together or how his hand's meant to stick. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So when you got into MCP, were you getting into it with a view to do tournaments or were you just looking for a Friday night beer and pretzels game? What were you looking for when you got in?
So to be honest, when I get into any game, I tend to play it quite a lot. So Simon over at Boarding Broom is actually my son's godfather. The gaming shop is like 5 minutes from where I live. So I'll get lots of times in. So it was sort of just Legion had almost, not died, but it took a dive with the lockdown because it was just about to really take off and then it was just absolutely stunted when lockdown hit. So there weren't many people playing it, or rather weren't many people looking to play in the long run anymore. However, Marvel had really taken off still. It was, you know, it was becoming really popular because I think the main attraction to it is that you don't have to paint the same model more than twice, which is great for a lot of people. I don't paint that much personally, but I 100% agree. It is a lot easier to paint, say, one Wolverine than 30 Tactical Marines, do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's one of the best things about it. You can experiment on models. You can try different things out. And they don't, as long as I try and keep all the bases to be more or less the same color scheme.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, you can go knock yourself out on them and then you stick them all together. And for some reason, you put all 10 together and it still looks good.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, the way that the heroes almost all come together and even the villains.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect. So you got into it. You obviously started to enjoy the game. When lockdown finally finished and we started to get, did you get any tournaments in when there were, 'cause there was a period of breaking lockdown around last summer. Did you get any tournaments in then or were your first tournaments in the most recent end of lockdown?
During that little sort of gap in the lockdown, I think that's when I had maybe one, maybe two events. I think it might have been two, actually, at Boarding Brum. This is obviously pre-long shanks, back in the, you know, the dark days where we didn't have the scoring and the ranking system. But, yeah, I got two in then, back when there wasn't a lot out. I was still running, like, Ebony Moore in my roster then. I hadn't even discovered Corvus, really. But, yeah, I got on all right. I think I went, yeah, I'm pretty sure I went first at one and second at the other, which was good. Both undefeated still, so.
Well done. So you were already in the competitive mindset and you'd already cracked the game by that point.
Yeah, I already knew what I was doing, I think. I'd got a decent amount of reps in.
Okay. And when we were in lockdown, did you try TTS much? How did you get on with that if you did try it?
I went on TTS once. For I think it was a season four. I had a really good experience except for just the one game that I had outside of the league. But everyone I played with in the league was great. I got through to like an invitational thing, and it was really close. There was a rule in there that I think really swung the game. I think I ended up placing like 7th or 8th. So it was really good. It was a good experience to play on there. I just don't. I mean, no disrespect to the people who've made the TTS mod. It's phenomenal. It's great. It is the best TTS mod. But I still don't think you can capture everything that you get when you play in person.
No, absolutely. And I think, I started, I got one game in before the lockdown started again last year. And basically, I picked up MCP using TTS and did, I think I did season 4 and 5. And yeah, you then came out of that, came out of that, and then played in real life. And it is very similar, but much better experience playing in real life where possible. TTS has its benefits, but very much better to play in real life.
I mean, don't get me wrong, TTS has a lot of benefits. Like, I mean, you've got access to everything. You can play whenever you like. You don't need to book a table. You can play with anyone anywhere in the world. I mean, it's great, but it just lacks almost sort of the social contract and interaction that you have between players, I think.
And how did you find the difference between playing in the seasons, where essentially you get sometimes a couple of days, sometimes almost a week to prepare for your match, compared to playing in a tournament where quite often the draw goes up and you go, right, I'm on table 2, I'm going to go up there, and you look at your opponent's roster for the first time there and then, and you've got to make that decision there and then, as opposed to, like, say, in TTS with the seasons, quite often you've got a good 2 or 3 days knowing where your opponent's roster is and you can prepare for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting. So I'm perfectly fine with knowing what I'm playing like 10 minutes before a game. Like, I can deal with that. So I didn't really use the opportunity to check my opponent's rosters that much because I was of the opinion like I'd overthink it a little bit. I ran through like some of what they were taking to a couple of my friends a couple of times, but didn't really think that much about it. I know some of the people I'd played said that they'd got their friends to give them reps against my roster, which was, an interesting take. But I don't mind either way, to be honest. Like, if people wanna play in a league, I think it's cool to do that and do it that way. I don't know, maybe just do it so that you don't find out the roster in the league until the day of the game or something, but
Yeah, I've heard a few people talk about their experiences and saying how much they prepared for it. And
yeah.
I think it's just a different way of playing the game. I think, some people enjoy that. Some people prefer the find out there and then have to think on your feet. I think
Yeah.
whilst it is the same game, it's definitely a different skill set. And I think those that unfortunately don't have much time and therefore don't get the chance to get reps in or don't get a chance to really think through the rosters until they get to the game, it's a different way of playing it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's 100% an advantage to the fact that, I mean, with TTS, you can almost scout your opponent out. You can find out who they've played on there, talk to them. I mean, you can literally, in some cases, spectate the games, talk to people that they've previously played. I mean, when you see the roster, you're able to just play reps into it if you really want to. So I think it's very different to playing in person because you just sort of know what you're going into already. I mean, when I play in person, it's getting to the point now where a lot of people know what I'm playing already, but it's still not to the level of where I think they'll have prepared and had reps into it if it was the same as on TTS, for example.
Yeah, but I think you say people probably are starting to become aware of you, and if you're not, then if you're in the UK, you should be aware of him. If you go into any tournaments, and therefore your roster's probably something that people might not get reps in against, but they'll at least consider when building rosters. If they know you're at that event, they'll be thinking, well, there's a chance. If I want to do well, I'm going to come up against your roster. So
Yeah.
should get more difficult for you as time goes on.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of close games lately. What really caught me off was Avengers with Sam, because I hadn't played that many games into it, and it was just obscene to see six models at 17 that were all so good, do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Or 19 or whatever it was. They've got some serious legs to walk on tournament-wise, I think, and there's definitely something there for them.
Yes, I think we're going to see a lot of SAM spam in the future. So how do you go about constructing a roster? Obviously, you touched on it there, your roster hasn't changed massively
Yeah.
recently, but how do you go about constructing a roster in the first instance?
So I actually did make a few changes to my roster a couple of days ago. I changed three characters out that I'd already had in. But in terms of building a roster from scratch, so I've got an article called The Core of a Roster. I think, or I'm going to say every faction or affiliation rather, you can take three models and you're going to want those three models in every game. I mean, in the case of Black Order, it's not necessarily three models, it might be two. In Sam Spam, it might be four. But these are the models that are the core of your team. They'll make sure you're affiliated. That's what you're going to build around. So for more Web Warriors, it's 10 threat. And I think if any team can get to 10 threat, that's a really good core. So like Midnight Suns can also do it. I think Wakandans can as well. Because what it then means is you can plan specifically what you need at each threat value. So, I know going into a game what I'm going to play at, say, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 already, and my roster is built around that rather than just having various pieces to almost make it up on the spot. So that's the main thing for me when building a roster is to be aware of what you need on top of a core three characters to make the different threat values, making sure you can play all the different threat values, and most importantly, making sure you're comfortable playing all of them.
And how strictly do you stick to that? Because I must admit, when I was doing my roster a while ago, I tried to do that, and then I kept thinking, well, that's not very good into Brotherhood, or that probably isn't what I want at that threat value into, Black Order. Do you have a right at this threat value, I'm going to go with this, and then you look across at what you're playing and maybe make some tweaks, or are you much more like, right, this is the threat value, this is what I'm going with?
Yeah, so for me, it is literally a matter of if we're playing 19, it's Maul's Gwen Corvus with Reality Gem, Venom, and Killmonger. That's it. It's not going to change based on who I play. I don't think there's many matchups at all, really, where I'd change my roster. I mean, even when everyone was going, "Oh, Venom and Carnage are going to be terrible," there's all these energy attacks. I was like, "Yep, but I'm still going to take Venom in every single game." I don't think I've ever. Well, at least I haven't for a long time looked across at somebody's roster and then changed mine based on
Okay.
what they might like.
That's interesting to hear because, like I said, I kind of got myself into a bit of a pickle because I went with that to start with and then I started changing it and then I was like, this is falling to pieces. So I might try it more, stick to what I've
Yeah,
gone
I
with and see how that goes.
completely and utterly stick to my guns. I've probably had, or I definitely have had at least 400 games now with those three models as my core. I am looking at changing, not changing my core, but having it so my core can change Venom out for Moon Knight or Black Cat, which is a slightly different approach. But I think as the game changes, we need to be aware that we are going to need different approaches inevitably. Not the same thing. You can't throw a ball at a square-sized hole and expect it to go through. You've got to adapt eventually. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. So when you are there and you pick your roster, so you know what you've got there, what else are you doing as in, so that's your characters as such. What are you looking at for team tactics cards and crisis?
So in terms of team tactics cards, firstly, it's quite funny. I'd honestly think I'd be pretty happy just taking five tactics cards to a tournament. So I almost always run the same five, and there's nothing fancy. So I haven't got All You've Got. I don't run Bitter Rivals. I don't have No Matter the Cost. Nothing fancy at all. So the five I would take if I could only take five are simply Medpack and Brace as my restricted cards. Climbing Gear, all webbed up, and Lethal Protector. I mean, it's very basic, but it gives me the toolbox to do exactly what I need, and lets me adapt to what I'm playing and the situations that come up.
Fair enough. I mean, three of those are what I nearly always take as my five. climbing gear, brace, and med pack. They're
Yeah.
all good, solid choices.
Yeah, climbing gear is great. So I think really I've stapled those to my list. I mean, obviously I've got eight tactics cards because you need eight tactics cards. How often I'll use the others is a different question. I probably won't flex them in that much. I have usurped the throne, which I might take occasionally. If I come against a team where they've not got any throws really, then I'll probably put it in instead of brace just because I might as well. I recently put advanced R&D in and spider tracker. I'm not a huge fan of spider tracker. But to me, it's just climbing gear, a little more restricted. I get the bonus of being able to play it reactively. I 100% understand that, but I do just prefer climbing gear. Advanced R&D opens up some really interesting players with the Web Warriors, but I've been playing them for that long that the way I play them, I almost get around the power problems anyway. So it's nice to have that, but I don't feel it's needed at the same time.
Yeah, I played into Spider Trackers for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and as an opponent, it really does cause you a bit of a headache because you've got it's one of those things that you've got in the back of your mind, similar to Lethal Protector. It kind of makes you second guess what you're doing. I'm going to do
Well,
that, but actually, that could happen, and so it does play on your mind a bit. But I can see why climbing gear gives you that bit more of
yeah,
certainty.
the time where I take Spider Tracker is actually the only time I'll probably drop Venom, which is at 14 threat. And the reason I want Spider Tracker there over Lethal Protector is because Moon Knight, Black Cat, and Miles all have stealth. Spider Tracker can actually make you move out of range of being targeted at all with stealth, which is great. So I had, I think it was Sam Wilson moved in range to attack me with his shield, so that he could push me hopefully off an objective. So I just used the spider tracker to hop onto the other side. I was still securing it, but now I was outside of stealth range, and Sam had already used his charge. So he couldn't attack me, he couldn't get to me either, which was great.
Okay, that makes sense. So then you've got Crisis have been picked. You've got your core. You know what you're playing based on threat value. When you look across the table and you see your opponents pick theirs, and you get into that deployment phase, what are you looking for at that point? What's going through your mind as you're sat there looking at what they've got and what they've decided to pick, and before you actually deploy and picking your game plan as such.
So I'll try and look. My deployment, to be honest, is more based on what the mission is than where my opponent sets up. But for the most part, I'll look at sort of reach that they have with their characters, who they're going to be trying to use to pick their objectives up, and most importantly, the amount of power generation they have innately. So whether they've got any characters that get two power a turn or one power a turn, because I think that's one of the biggest things in the game that gets overlooked at times is just how impactful having two power turn one can be.
Yes, having played Asgard for a while, when I stopped playing Asgard and went to just the one power per turn, it was very like, oh, I can't do everything I want to do now, first turn.
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge bonus to have. I mean, it's why the X-Men get such use out of first class because it sort of gives them access to that extra power turn one in terms of the interact.
Yes, absolutely. So, do you ever feel that you need to protect Venom in that sense from somebody who's particularly good at energy attacks? Or again, is it just, right, I've got what I've got. This is what I want to do on the crisis
So
selection.
I think most of the time, I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I've had to look hide Venom away. I think most games he starts very central to the board. And in a situation where I've got someone that's going to try and ping Venom from range with energy, what I'll actually do is save some power on Gwen, and use Lifesaver backwards. So I basically, when he's targeted, use it to pull him towards them so that hopefully he can counterattack. I mean, it's a bit risky. I've had a couple of situations where, it goes to plan for them. They daze Venom. I'm left with one character down. But then I also have the big swing and power next turn with Venom with all his power. So I don't worry too much about the idea that Venom can go down to energy. I think if you overthink it and let that dictate where you place your model, too much. You're giving the opponent the bigger advantage than just sitting there and going, yeah, I've got $2, but let's take it. You know, I've got a reroll. Occasionally, you can get cover. Obviously, he's a bigger model, but Lifesaver, the reroll, make it so I don't feel that energy defense is actually too bad. $2 is low, but when you consider that the average is only 3 anyway, it's not catastrophic.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think people get hung up a little bit too much on the defense dice differences. Especially the way I roll defense dice, I kind of fail whether I'm rolling 4 or 2 dice. It doesn't make any difference.
It's a big thing, but you can also do it in reverse. So if they've got a model with a high energy attack, you can use Venom to bite out where they put it. So rather than you worrying about acting reactively to them, you can act preemptively, place your Venom, and then odds are they're going to put their Cyclops or Storm across from you, thinking, oh, great, energy attacks. And that can play into what you want as well.
That makes sense. Yeah. You mentioned you played a vast number of games so far. How much do you rely on theory crafting, and how much do you rely on playing games for when you're trying to work out what to do?
So what do you mean, Sora?
So do you spend a lot of time theory crafting around your roster and around plans for games, or do you base it more on your experience having done it on the tabletop?
So I think just because of the sheer amount of games I get in, I do theory craft a little bit, not a lot, but then I'd put it into practice. So it's like a couple of days ago, I decided I wanted Black Cat and Toad in my roster just to try them out. And then last night, I tried them both out in 2 games. I mean, honestly, I can get maybe 10 games in a week most weeks. So I'd say from in person, it's from actual experience. Whether that's off the back of theory crafting, though, I'm not sure whether you'd say that, but. Yeah, I like to play out and practice everything out, because it's all well and good thinking something out, but the reality is always a little bit different.
Fair enough. And when you see the new releases from AMG, are your first thoughts to look at those cards and really kind of dig into them and see how they're going to affect you? Or are you, again, more of a skip through it, that looks interesting, let's see what it's like on the table, let's not worry about it until I actually come to face it?
I will, to be honest, look through all the cards properly when I get a chance. Sometimes I miss cards and then I end up just having to learn on the fly. Like when I played Chris in the last tournament in the final, I had no idea really what War Machine or Sam did going into it, and just sort of played it on the fly. I'm cool with doing that, to be honest, but I do try and read everything, keep on top of everything, look how maybe they can fit into Web Warriors. But I'm that comfortable with my roster, and or not. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, there's always something better or different, or it can do something in a slightly different way. But my roster, I'm perfectly happy with as it was before. I'm perfectly happy with how it is now. I'll consider new things when they come out, and I'll consider the impact they might have on me. And I know recently someone said, oh, how are you going to cope with all these mystic attacks? And I was like, I don't understand what you mean, because all I lose is one spider sense on miles, and you know, I'm not that bothered about that.
Again, makes sense. Have you got any other tips, generic tips for tournament goers? Anything else we haven't particularly covered that you think is important going into a tournament for somebody who perhaps maybe either hasn't done one before or who is looking to improve their standings in tournaments?
I think the most important thing is just, I know it sounds silly, but I think in order to do well, you have to think confidently. So I think if you go in and you start losing a game and you drop your spirits, odds are you've lost the game because you've dropped your spirits. You've just got to carry on, see it all through, and don't let anyone tell you that you're doing something wrong. So for quite a while on some Discord, with some accounts that aren't labelled as Web Warrior Protocols, friends of mine have been like, oh, actually, I know someone who plays Web Warriors this way, and they do really well. And they've been told that they're wrong, and that, like, that's not how you play Web Warriors. And I'm sat here like, I mean, yeah, sure, you can have your opinion, but I'm doing okay. I'm pretty good. Like, I'm sitting in a nice place with my Web Warriors. You can tell me that's not how you should play them, but you know, they speak for themselves. So I think just be confident in what you want to do. Go in with a plan. Don't let other people tell you how you should play your game. And play for yourself and be confident.
No, absolutely. I think the joys of the internet is everybody has an opinion. And I think one of the joys about this game as well is that, there are some clearly better ways of doing things, but on its day, most things can beat most things. And as you say, if you've got a plan and you're confident with it, then sticking to that makes much more sense than constantly trying to chop and change.
100%.
So if we move across onto Web Warriors now. So what initially attracted you to Web Warriors? Was it a love of Spider-Man like a lot of people, or had you tried out a number of different affiliations and they just fitted your play style?
So I hadn't tried any, I'd not played Marvel, and I went straight to Web Warriors purely because of Venom. So when I saw Venom, I was like, I want this. I need that Venom model. I need to be able to, throw Venom down, have Eddie Brock, smashing the place up, going about. I love his character. I love the recent movie. More recently, the King in Black series is phenomenal. So that's sort of the latest story arc for Venom and Eddie Brock, in terms of the comics. So that's really what drew me in, just Venom. And I like Miles as a character. Miles is pretty cool. Spider-Man overall, yeah. I'm not that. It's not. I don't think I'm as much of a Spider-Man fanboy as some Web Warrior players. It's definitely more about Venom for me. But I do love all of the webheads. I mean, Ghost Spider's amazing. She's really cool. I do like Miles, a lot, to be honest, in his character and sort of the different abilities that he has. And there's just a lot to them. They're all the same but different in a way, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it feels like they synergize quite well as a core. I suppose your other option was you could have gone Spider Foes if you wanted Venom, but
Yeah,
I think you went for the right way, especially in the early days.
I think back then as well. So I think Miles and Gwen had not long dropped, and there wasn't really any spider foes. I also really, really dislike Green Goblin. I don't know if that's a natural web warrior inside of me telling me that, he's the enemy or what. I just don't like him. I'm not a fan of him. So, whereas with say the Web Warriors, I like all the models. I'll play them. I don't really agree with playing models that you don't like. So MODOK, for example, is an incredible character. I think he's incredible in Web Warriors, but if I was asked to take him, I'd be like, no, because I think he's ugly as sin. I hate the model. Same as there's a couple of models that are really good, and it's just for me, I don't like the model, so I'm not going to play them regardless of how good they are.
Fair enough. It seems to have worked so far for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's working out, yeah.
Yeah, and so was that core that you talked about earlier, was that something you settled on quite early, or did it
Yeah.
take a bit of practice to get to that point?
Well, I think it was really early on. Because, like I said, I don't know if the best way to explain it is weaponized autism, but I like things a very set way. So having a permanent core works for me. So from the very start, it was sort of like, that's what I'm going to take every game. That way I know it. I don't have to mess around. I know I've got that. Let's work from there. So from very early on, I was playing with that affiliated core. I don't think I've ever really changed it. I've maybe had about four games without Venom just to try other things, but that's about it.
Okay. And you mentioned before about how your friends were being told that's not the way to play Web Warriors. How would you say that the way in which you approach Web Warriors is different to perhaps the norm?
So I think just to start on the second point you made about, well, the second comment, the norm as such. I think a lot of people look at Web Warriors and go, oh, they don't want to be in a fight. They want to sort of kite and skirt and do shenanigans. So I, on the other hand, I definitely want to be doing that. But I also think that you can make an insanely aggressive Web Warriors team just with the core three, just with Miles, Gwen, and Venom. They've all got, Miles and Gwen both have ways to add additional dice to the dice pools. Venom already has a very respectable pair of attacks with decent ranges, with some decent effects. Obviously, the heal's amazing. When you combine that with all webbed up, you can set up for one turn where the web warriors just go on the offensive. They just go crazy. I mean, Gwen is my favourite example of this. So if she's got free power, for example, you can, and she's in the right spot, your first action can be a freestyle beatdown. If it's the all webbed up turn, that's an 8 dice attack with a throw. And then your second action can do a spider technique. So that goes from just being a 4 dice base to a 6 dice because of all webbed up, and then a 9 dice because of the extra free attack dice. So suddenly this ghost spider that no one really expects it from, that's just, you know, pulling people around and pulling people to safety, is actually beating the hell out of someone, you know. And I think they can really flex into that really well.
Yeah. And so do you feel your playstyle is a lot more aggressive than perhaps others tend to use Web Warriors?
Yeah, I wouldn't say my playstyle is more aggressive. I'd say it has the option to be and can be, in the sense that, like, I've still had games where I have barely any attacks. There's nothing more confusing for the opponent than when Corvus doesn't attack at all, really, and just sort of walks around holding an objective. That really catches people off. So I have some games where I play the more traditional sense, using some of the more aggressive ways in sort of a different way. And then I have games where I do go in and try and set up for that one big swing turn and, you know, play really aggressively.
Okay, so you've got that option then. So you've got the choices there.
I'm definitely not limited in any way to either at all. Like, and the great thing is, my teams as well, I can swap mid-game from going on the offensive to going into control, or going from control into being extremely aggressive, which is what I like the most about the Web Warriors, that no one can really know what my game plan is, because I can just swap it out at any moment, and that's what catches people off.
Yeah, and I think that's really powerful. You know, you look at the top players, and it's that ability to be able to pivot.
Yeah, it's almost like in boxing terms, when you have a southpaw, so the fact that you can swap from one to the other, whereas most people are limited to one, it opens up a real vast new range of possibilities, and it can really catch someone off guard.
You mentioned earlier the big bad that is Corvus. How did you end up having Corvus in your roster?
So, like I said, I figured out that my core needed a 5 to do certain threat missions and be affiliated, and just to do, I think, 19 threat being affiliated. So I originally had, I think I had 4, but then I realised I really dislike 4 in terms of gameplay. Then I went over to Ebony Maw, because Ebony Maw just seemed, I liked Ebony Maw as a character. I liked the entirety of the Black Order, but Ebony Maw at first was the one that shouted to me, that was sort of like, oh, that's interesting. I played him in an event, went 4-0 with Ebony Maw, and in one of the games came against Corvus with Reality Gem, and sort of had a couple of turns where it was a little bit ropey, where Corvus was just going crazy, and I managed to play around it. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to try him out as a 5 threat. Someone pointed out that he's not actually a 5 threat and that needed the gem. But at that point, I was only using like 7 or 8 of my roster slots anyway. So I was like, that's fine, let's have a go. And I think Corvus really leans into both the aggressive style of play and the control aspect of Web Warriors. And what I mean by that is, obviously, Corvus doesn't have any pulls, pushes, throws, nothing like that. But you can really dictate and control the board just with where he stood. Death Blow's a great attack for repositioning. I mean, a lot of people don't use it. I like Atom Splitter when needs be, and he can just really dictate the board.
Yeah, it was a real surprise when I saw that you were running Corvus within Web Warriors, because I kind of looked at it and went, well, okay, not seen that before. But
everyone wants to say. Everyone, a lot of people look at Web Warriors roster and they're very confused, and I think that plays into the roster a bit, the fact that it at times catches people off guard. Like I said, again, it can appear to be wanting to do one thing and just completely switch it up.
Yeah. So do you run him at other threat values other than 19? You mentioned you put him in 19. Have you found that?
Yeah. So at 18 threat, he makes an appearance with Proxima, because it's obviously a really powerful combination, being able to control The priority, Proximate is incredible in the Web Warriors. She has, invulnerability and martial prowess, so her defensive ability is already really high. I was running him for a long time at 15, so I'd take Miles Gwen, Corvus, Reality of Venom. Now I'm looking at possible other builds going 5 wide at the lower threat values. It's just a matter of trying them out, because, like I said, Moon Knight, I've only recently got him along with Toad, who is actually the first time I've run a 2-threat character. But at 19 and 18, Corvus is definitely making an appearance, as well as at 20.
Fair enough. So how do you find playing the same affiliation over and over, given there are so many other options out there in the game? How have you managed to stay focused on just...
To be fair, this is one of the things a lot of people ask, and they're like, are you not bored of Web Warriors? And if I'm being honest, I'm not at all in the slightest. I could carry on playing Web Warriors indefinitely, and I don't think I'd have a problem with it. I don't know if it's just me, if it's different people, different things. I just don't. I tend to enjoy having something that I know how to play, and that I know what I'm doing with, and that's just how I've enjoyed the game. Whereas my friend Elliot, for example, he likes changing, a lot day in, day out. He'll be trying different things, and I mean that's on him. That's how he wants to play, and I think we all have different things we do when playing and enjoy doing.
Fair enough. I did mention I was talking to you on our WhatsApp chat the other day, and I got a couple of questions, and one of them I thought was quite interesting. So what two characters would you choose if you were forced to drop Proxima and Corvus, for example, at a team event? So if you're going to a team event and there's Black Order guy and they want that, and you're like, right, fine, what else outside of those ones would kind of attract you at the moment?
So in terms of a 5-threat and a 3-threat, I'd probably be looking at Scarlet Witch and Iron Fist, maybe. I mean, they're both really powerful, independent characters.
Yeah.
I had Scarlet Witch and Morata for a long time anyway. She's great, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, Scarlet Witch and Iron Fist are the first two that come to mind. For 3-threats, I like Punisher as well, to be honest. I know not a lot of people run him, but I actually think he's really good. Okay. Other 5-threats, Angela, again, she works with what I want to do quite nicely. So I think in answer to that question, if I had to drop Corvus, I'd be replacing him with Angela or Scarlet Witch. If I had to drop Proxima, I'd be replacing her with Iron Fist or possibly even the Punisher.
Makes sense. And what advice have you got for any Web Warrior players out there who either just picking it up or maybe looking at it and trying to fix the way they go? Is it just about giving yourself that dynamism of being, that option between the two, or is there anything else that you the core to Web Warriors?
I think the most important thing that a lot of Web Warrior players might not pick up on immediately is you have to realise you have... So a lot of people bang on Venom's very slow, but if he was any faster, he'd be utterly broken. You have such a long reach with Venom and Gwen's Web Line and Web Snare. It's a range 4 pull. Venom's arguably got the best pull in the game because its range 4 doesn't need line of sight and is medium. So I think just look at the board and really try and scope out how far your reach actually is. You can have Venom doing attacks turn 1, which, a small move, not many people would think that. You've just got to really lean into the potential shenanigans almost and the movement that the Web Warriors have access to.
Excellent. Good advice. I've not managed to play Web Warriors yet. Played against them a number of times, but not actually run them myself. So hopefully that's good for those that are out there that are either thinking of picking it up or currently running.
I think the other thing is as well, every attack for Miles, Gwen and Venom at least, every attack on the card has its use and is very useful. So Impact Webbing's an amazing attack to get 1 power, just to do a web line, for example. Freestyle Beatdown has the throw to move someone off. Spider Technique, the free advance off, it's great. You can almost look at it as if you're going to move anyway, you might as well roll the 4 dice and take it. It's almost a free attack. If we look at Miles, the Web Swing and Venom Blast are both phenomenal attacks. Web line obviously boosts him up to 6 dice. The throw is incredible. Venom Blast, arguably the best attacking my roster outside just because it's automatically making the opponent drop all of their tokens. And then again with Venom, a lot of time you'll get hit and your immediate instinct will be to do, you know, we are Venom, to try and heal. But sometimes it's worth just doing the strike just so you don't give them too much power, but you give them the bleed, which is also great. So I think it's important to make sure you use the entirety of your cards and don't focus too much on, say, we are Venom every turn or just web swinging every turn with web kicks and Miles. You need to use what you have available to you. I mean, at the end of the day, that's why we take these character cards, for everything that's on them. So we might as well use everything that's on them.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. I mean, one of the things I've started to do more in my games is thinking, trying to focus on why am I doing what I'm doing and is there a better option on the card? You know, I think you do get, it's easy to get caught into, right, this is what this character does best and that's what they're going to keep doing, but actually stopping and thinking, is that the right thing in this situation?
You know? Yeah, can quickly fall into familiarity. So you can quickly fall into, say, the pattern of, you know, every turn with, say, Valkyrie, I need to move, throw and attack someone. But it's always important to remember you can just as easily move, not move, sorry, you could just basically say charge and then attack again. You know, you could move and then throw. You could move and then charge. There's so many different combinations of all the things, and when you've got great character cards like Miles, Gwen and Venom, the different amount of things you can do, it's just important to know what you're capable of.
Absolutely. So the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about on this episode was around your new website. I say new, it's been gone for a couple of weeks now, hasn't it? But it's, you've been pumping out the articles.
Yeah, so it was a month old a couple of days ago. Obviously, I named it Web Warrior Protocols for obvious reasons. It's the only affiliation I play. I toyed with some other ideas. So at one point, I was thinking of starting a podcast with a few people, and we were looking at calling it the Miniverse of Madness. Then I was looking at calling it Lethal Protector, but I thought that was a bit too edgy. So in the end, I went with the Web Warrior Protocols. The only other one I was looking at was the 14th Legion, which for a long time has been my Instagram tag for both doing commissions and for wargaming. But I think making the change to Web Warrior Protocols, you know, it's very quickly identifiable. It's very, people know what that is and who it is. It's like Xavier Protocols. Everyone knows who that is. And I think Web Warrior Protocols is a bit more iconic and identifiable rather than, say, the 14th Legion or Lethal Protector, which is cool. Like you said, I've been trying to smash out content. I almost feel bad if I don't do a good article on a day. So I feel like today, for example, I've put up the post about updates and sales, which is great. But part of me is like, oh, I should really be doing a character breakdown or something, which there's plenty of time to do that. You know, I can keep pumping them out. It's been really helpful to have some feature articles from different people. So a lot of people at my local gaming store, my sponsor Boarding Brum, have put forward some stuff that they want to post up, which has been great. It eases pressure a little bit. I actually started college today, so, you know, a little bit more time intensive means I might have a little less time for the articles, but I'm still going to try and smash them out. I'm looking to feature on as many podcasts as possible. House Party Protocols, I'm now on there once a month. I was going to ask you actually if I could maybe make a regular feature on Tales of Crisis on your thing. I'll be coming on to Morlocks as well soon, and tomorrow I'm on a YouTube channel. So this week's been really busy for content creating, because I did House Party Protocols yesterday, I'm doing this podcast today, and then I'm doing a YouTube video tomorrow. But it's great, it's what I enjoy, so you know, I can never complain that there's too much of it, because it's what I want to be doing anyway.
Fair enough. So if people want to see it, it's webwarriorprotocols.com?
Yeah, it's webwarriorprotocols.com. Nice and simple.
Excellent. And what kind of things are you covering on there? Like you mentioned character breakdowns. I've seen you do some kind of tournament coverage as well.
Sorry to cut you off. Because I'm posting so frequently, I'm covering quite a lot of things. So I think if I was only posting, say, once a week, I'd have to, you know, pick a category and sort of stick to it. But at the minute, posting daily means I can just cover loads of different topics every week. So I'm covering roster building, new character breakdowns, character breakdowns of previous characters. So my plan is to do an article for every single character in the game. I plan to do some Crisis Card articles at some point. I like doing more series of articles called The Next Event. So it's just a little bit of preempt towards whatever event I'm going to next, what people who are going with me are taking. I like to do my event write-ups as well. Just loads of different things, to be honest. And if anyone ever has anything that they'd like to see, I'm also more than open to suggestions. The only thing I don't want to do is sort of become like a statistics blog. I don't want to have a blog or a website rather that you go onto and it's just full of like numbers and charts. I mean, as helpful as that is, it's already out there, so I don't need to be doing that.
No, that makes sense. And as you say, there are others out there that are covering those things. So it's good. It's been great because it kind of keeps popping up, and I've been sharing them on Twitter and all over the place.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Obviously, I mean, at the minute it's completely like there's no profit being made. It's not monetized in any way. It's completely free to view. That's how I want it to stay. I don't want to ever put anything behind a paywall. So it's great to see when people share it because it really helps get that exposure and move it along. I don't expect people to share it. I don't expect anyone to feel obliged to post it up, but when they do, it's really great, and it shows appreciation, which is the main thing.
It's definitely worth checking out. So I'll put the link in the show notes for anybody that wants that. But yeah, I would highly recommend go check it out, read a couple of those articles. And as you mentioned, you've got some guest ones on there, and I enjoyed one of the guest ones the other day. That was just something a little bit different. So it's good to see the growth there. I do like a good blog that you can kind of pop in, or a good set of articles you can pop in for a couple of minutes, read, and then, oh, okay, that's interesting, and then you can always go back to it afterwards.
The great thing is because obviously it's a blog slash website. As it grows, it's almost like a library. So when a library first opens and it only has a few books, you can only read those books so many times. But posting every day means very rapidly the amount of content's growing. You can go on the site now, and spend a good couple of hours, I think, read if you want to. You don't have to, obviously, but if you want to read in all the different articles, as time goes on, there's going to be more. You're going to be able to read faction specific things. It's going to be great. I just enjoy doing it.
Yeah, and it's that good thing where either you can drip feed yourself of it and, every day read the article, or you can go and binge it. It's almost like having Netflix, isn't it? Where all of a sudden you go and binge a box set of something. You can go and binge a load of articles if you want to, or you can just pick them up as they go.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I'm trying to go to as many events as possible as well, which means people can constantly see, the different things being played, the different things I'm trying or taking, and it's just an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And how are you finding the tournament scene for MCP, obviously in the UK?
It's super, super healthy. I mean, a lot, and I genuinely mean this, a lot of games have super toxic communities. I've had so I'm a personal caller myself, so I've had some games against certain opponents where that's very clearly almost an issue. Had some games where with people cheating, people not being very nice to play against. I've had one game where someone told me to cheat myself, and I was like, if you want to win that bad, go ahead, crack on. But with the Marvel log, especially the higher up. So I've obviously played in a lot of finals. I've been to seven events. I've been on top tables every game, and I don't come across toxic players. So that's great for me. It means you can if you can have such a positive experience at the high end of it. It just shows to me that it's going to be a really consistent, enjoyable experience for everyone, which is the main thing. Because there's nothing worse than going to a tournament and leaving with a sour taste in your mouth purely based off of player experience.
Absolutely, and I think, similar to yourself, I've had some very negative games on other game systems, and it's never a great experience. Normally they are rarer, but it's not what you want. And I've only done. Sorry, go on.
But it doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
But when it does, it can really ruin almost. It can almost ruin a game system for you if you have a really bad experience, which is a shame, obviously. But, you know, a lot of people say don't let others dictate to you what you play or what you do. But it's going to some extent. You have a bad experience, you're not going to, you know, want to revisit that. And luckily, like I said, I've not had a bad experience with Marvel. I've had a couple of opponents be a little bit salty in the early rounds of the tournaments recently. So sort of like they've drawn against me and gone, oh, I'm really hoping not to play you. But then as we've played, it's become a really enjoyable experience. It's become something like more of a laugh. And then in the end, it's actually turned out to be fine.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that, because I've done multiple tournaments of other systems over the years, and you do get often people will say something at the very start of a game and not mean it. You know, they'll say it, and you'll be like, oh, it's going to be like that. And then as it goes in, it's actually quite enjoyable. But, you know, sometimes you turn up. I remember when I ran Zinch when I was doing AOS. You put Zinch down, they go, oh, I'm not playing Zinch.
Yeah, my friend runs Zinch, so I get that completely. I mean, I don't know if it's because of other negative experiences, but as Web Warrior Protocols has become a bit better known, people draw me in and they'll sort of be like, oh, I really didn't want to play you. And I think it might be because, you know, they've got an expectation. I mean, obviously, it's fine for me to say this. People can have their opinions. I think I'm a pretty decent person to play against. I try and have a laugh. You know, I don't try and be... I'm not that guy. I'm not going to be like, oh, no, you've put your model down. You can't go back. No, I'm pretty leading with it, pretty loose with it. Like, I think some people maybe expect that when they play someone who's classed as a tournament player that it's going to be a negative play experience. I just want it to be as engaging as fun for both of us, regardless of the outcome of the game.
Yeah, and I think there's probably two parts to that, isn't there? There's one that element of, oh, he's a tournament player, this is going to be unenjoyable because he's... And I think all systems have that view of tournaments in general, and tournament players are these horrible people that just have a single way of playing, and it's just not true at all.
Yeah, but, you know, these tournament players are these horrible, horrible people that don't care about the lore or the fluff. They're just there to, you know, try and smash everyone. Well, it's really not the case at all.
No, not at all. And I think also you probably, as you become more known and you win more tournaments, that does be the other side of it, where people will be like, oh, I didn't want to draw you this early because that's probably going to knock me out of contention.
Yeah. So I think there's a guy, David Grant. He jests, obviously, but we've both shown at three events and he's played me at all three. And he's ended up going 3-1 at each event because he's beat everyone else but me. So it's sort of, I keep taking away his chance to place. I mean, he laughs about it. He's a decent guy, which is the main thing. I know Quinn as well. Quinn Duggan jives about it. We played in the one event. He was playing a more like, casual roster at that time. But then he was also saying at the next one that he really didn't want to play me in the final. Which, I mean, it's part of the game. We've all got to play each other inevitably. Especially if we're doing more and more events. So I'm happy to play anyone. I mean, people might not be happy to play me, but it is what it is, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's good to challenge yourself against the players that are doing the best. So take it as a positive.
People always learn a lot. I mean, I don't want to sound stupid, like stupidly cocky or anything, but there tends to be a reason people are... you know, seen as good at a game. And if someone is good at something, the best thing you can probably do is learn from them. I mean, it's like if you went to play football against a professional football player and just went in going, oh, it's going to be really boring, I'm just going to lose. Or you could, on the other hand, go in, oh, this is going to be really exciting, I could learn a lot. And I think that's the main thing.
Absolutely. You do tend to learn more against the better players. Especially, and again, it's around the attitude. Yes, you could get that player that is clearly better than you and just turns up, plays the game, hardly speaks to you and walks off. Those ones totally get not great. But if you've got against somebody who is a better player, but they're engaging and talking to you, and you know, you can learn so much from that experience.
Yeah, well, this is it. And I've got to say, so my partner Kelly comes with me to some events. She ends up becoming the designated driver, bless her. And we always have quite like engaging times where our opponents have quite a laugh. You know, it's quite chilled rather than just, you know, sitting back and, you know, me rolling dice, she sits there. Like we always get engaged and speak to people. That's the main thing.
And that's the best way to build the community.
Yeah, definitely.
And as you say, it is a growing community at the moment. I think you're very well placed down in Birmingham and the Midlands, etc. There seems to be a real hub: Derby, Nottingham,
Yeah.
Birmingham.
We've really started to grow it in the in my local area. So we had an event that was 48 players, which I believe was the biggest one we've had so far. Obviously, we're going to have the one at Element at the end of October. That's 64 people. It's going to be a bigger event. It's going to be great because, I mean, the game can only get bigger and better, which is the main thing. I think a lot of people were worried with another game that comes out with a huge IP. Because sometimes, as we've seen in the past, that can cause problems. But Crisis Protocol just seems to be going from strength to strength, which is just great. It's a brilliant experience, a brilliant game. If I could just say one thing to anyone that hasn't picked up the game, it's you won't be able to put it down once you have, so make sure you're prepared for that. It's so good that, like, once you're in for good, do you know what I mean?
Yes, very, very addictive. I've got to admit.
It's
Right.
just quickly, sorry, I know we're probably pressed for time. I think it's similar to when you play a card game and you know, and it's like, oh, I just want to open one more pack. It's like, oh, I just want one more character pack. So I think that applies a lot, which is quite interesting.
Yes, I don't think I've ever got to the point where I've been had enough character packs. There's always another one that you want. That's
Yeah,
true.
I'm quite lucky. I only have about 17, 18 models, to be honest. I've been able to like refrain from buying them all, whereas my friend got into the game about a month and a half ago and has now spent like a grand buying everything,
Yep.
which
For
is bonk.
those that are panicking, you don't need to. As you say, you can do it your way. You've done it quite
Oh yeah,
successfully on a
exactly.
minimal
When
amount.
people ask me if you need to buy like stupid things, I always say, well, I've managed to get quite high up, you know, do really well at tournaments, and I only own a few packs. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've bought some packs for cards and sold the characters, but you tend to make your money back anyway, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for coming on. If people want to reach out to you other than via Web Warrior Protocols, are you on the Discords and social medias?
So, all the links to these are on my site, but if not, I think on Discord I am. Web Warrior Protocols hash and then my number's 1084, I think. On Twitter, it's Web Warrior Protocols. Instagram is still the 14th underscore Legion, as I mentioned earlier on. I am on Facebook. You'll find me in most of the groups. You'll probably find me posting or sharing things because, like we've discussed, I post daily, which means I'm constantly sharing things. And I just really want to say, if anyone wants to reach out and talk Marvel, please do because I'll talk Marvel to anyone at any time about anything to do with it. Like, that's the main thing. I just really enjoy talking about the game in general. Like, as you can probably tell, I could keep you here all day talking about Marvel.
Absolutely. I mean, it's great to have people like yourself in the community that have got that enthusiasm for it. Even having played that many games with a single affiliation, it's still got that buzz.
Yeah, 100%. It's great.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on. I'll stick those details in the show notes so everybody can see where to get hold of you, and hopefully you'll get flooded with lots of people wanting to talk about MCP.
Yeah, hopefully. The only other thing is, like I said, if I just quickly mention my sponsor, I did say at the start, it's Boarding Brum, which is a West Midlands gaming centre. They've recently launched a little bit of a sale on some Marvel stuff, which you can check out on my site. I won't bore you with all the details now, but if you're looking to pick some boxes up, there's some decent deals there that you can have a look into as well. So, yeah, just thanks for letting me put that in there as well.
No problem. There you go. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Indeed, thank you for having me.